number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
From all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
All right, welcome in, welcome in. It is 1 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means you are listening to WMUC-FM Radio here in College Park on 90.5 FM. My name is Jack Wynn. I am the host of Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. We have had a great first hour for you so far. We talked about the NBA, the incredible game Wemby had. We talked about OTAs and some of the major stories with the Giants and Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And now we come back in. So, we're sticking with the NFL as they released their official schedule for the upcoming NFL season. And I gotta say, I was thrilled. The schedule was great. And I gotta give a lot of credit to the NFL because the schedule release received so much attention and excitement online. It's so cool, by the way, seeing every NFL team do their schedule reveal videos on social media. The Giants sent Jameis Winston, you know, out into the streets to, you know, guess with fans. The Jets did color painting. The Chargers did a unique video. One team did a Minecraft theme. There's just a lot of excitement about the schedule. And this is what the NFL does better than every other sports league, and it's why the NFL has been so successful and grown so rapidly, is because they know how to put on an event. They know how to make something a big deal. And what the NFL has done is they've made every single game of the NFL season feel significant. It's only 17 games. It's once a week. By the end of the season, it seems like every team is just one win away from being in a much better spot or just one game away from missing the playoffs or whatever it may be. And so when the schedule comes out, finding out what these games are going to be and what order they're in feels incredibly exciting. And the NFL, you know, teasing the schedule release, saying, all right, yeah, we're going to give you a Super Bowl rematch in week one, but we're not going to tell you anything else. And you know what? Fine. We'll give you Cowboys-Giants on Sunday Night Football, but we're not going to tell you anything else. Wait until the 14th. And then the 14th finally comes. All the schedules come out. People get excited. It feels like a big event. It's almost as big as like the draft lottery in the NBA. I'm so serious in terms of popularity and the attention that people give it. So, you know, credit to the league and the league offices for continuing to show why football has established itself as America's favorite pastime. So, a couple of things that I want to talk about. First off is the Thanksgiving schedule. And this was thrilling because a lot of the time we get some games on Thanksgiving that are underwhelming. We get unfair matchups or it's just not the best games of the world because the NFL understands, look, you're with your family. You know, you're not actually supposed to be focusing only on football on Thanksgiving. You're supposed to be talking about what you're grateful for and, you know, sharing experiences of the holiday. Well, not this year. The NFL said, screw that. We are giving you the best slate that we possibly can. Starting off on Thanksgiving Eve, the night before Thanksgiving. It's the Green Bay Packers heading to LA to take on the Rams. Two NFC powerhouses, two teams that think they can win the Super Bowl this year going head to head. Then you get Thanksgiving Day. Bears at Lions. a game which is usually boring because these two teams have historically not been very good. But this year, the game is super exciting. The Bears are the division champions. The Lions are a couple years removed from being seen as one of the top contenders in the NFL. Are they going to continue? Who's going to end up with dominance in the NFC North? That's all being found out at 1 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Then you've got the middle slate, the game where people are usually going to eat and hang out and sit with their family. Well, it's Eagles at Cowboys, the game no one's going to want to peel their eyes away from. This game is going to be exciting. The Cowboys are always a draw, and the Eagles are dysfunctional yet incredibly successful, and the rivalry goes so deep, you're going to want to see it. And then, of course, closing off Thanksgiving, Chiefs at Bills, Mahomes and Josh Allen. So, just one of the greatest Thanksgiving slates that we've ever had. Super, a lot to look forward to on that end. The next slate that I think is important is Christmas. Because, in case you forgot, the NFL has stolen back Christmas. They're like the Grinch. You know, there was Christmas basketball, which was its thing. There was Thanksgiving football and Christmas basketball. The NBA owned Christmas. They had big games. It was LeBron versus, KD. It was LeBron and Kobe. It was MJ back in the day. A lot of historically great marquee matchups. And instead, the NFL said, you know what? That whole sports Christmas thing kind of looks nice. I think I want a taste of that. And so all of a sudden they throw one game on Christmas Eve and it does really well. And then they notice, hey, next year Christmas is on a Sunday. And what they noticed is all of the ratings that went to the NBA normally came to the NFL. And so as the past few years have played out, the NFL said, all right, well, we can win the ratings game on Christmas. We might as well start putting some of these games there. And so listen to this slate that we've got. Packers at Bears. Two teams I just mentioned who are both playing on Thanksgiving. Gotta feel bad for those teams' families, by the way. Imagine being a player, finding out that you've got a game on Thanksgiving and on Christmas. Either way, going to be a great one. Super physical. One of the oldest rivalries in the history of the NFL. Then, Bills at Broncos. The Broncos felt like they deserved to go to the Super Bowl last year. The Bills lost to the Broncos in the divisional round of the playoffs last season, so this is their chance at revenge. Going to be a really good game in Denver, by the way. And then closing it off, an NFC Championship game rematch, Rams at Seahawks. The game that I personally am the most excited for this season. Those are two of the best teams in the league. They're rivals. Either one of them could have won the Super Bowl last year, but Seattle deserved it. So I'm excited to see how this stuff plays out. Not to mention, the primetime schedule looks really good as well. Usually the Thursday night games disappoint, or some of the Sunday night games or international games are underwhelming. But this year they all look really solid. I encourage you to go, glance at the schedule. So, we didn't spend all this time talking about the NFL releasing their schedule for nothing. I'm going to give you my way too early predictions for this upcoming NFL season. We're not going to get super in-depth. I'm going to give you my 7 playoff teams on each side, my awards, and my Super Bowl pick. So, starting in the AFC, I've got my 4 divisional winners. The Buffalo Bills, who I think is going to be the 1 seed. I think that they take it back from New England this season. I think that Josh Allen, with a real receiver, by the way, in DJ Moore, plus without the kind of cloud of Sean McDermott and this past era hanging over them, I think that the Bills are going to take a bit of a leap. I think New England is due for some natural regression now that they've got a first-place schedule, and I think the Bills end up with not only the division, but the number 1 seed in the conference. Next. Let me just give you the division winners, and then we'll get into them. So it was the Bills, I've got the Texans, the Chargers, and the Ravens, all winning their division this season. I just got into Buffalo. For Houston, I think that we're just going to see improvement from what we did last year. That defense was unstoppable. And I don't see any reason for them to get worse. A lot of their guys are really young. They're still developing and learning the scheme. Not to mention their defensive game plan is not overly complicated. The Texans' strategy is to play you straight up. They rank by far last in the league in disguise coverages that they throw at offenses, blitz rate, any of these other creative defensive, you know, mentalities that coaches like to adapt. That really hasn't been for Houston. They like to play straight up defense, and they like to kick your butt while doing it. I don't think they're going to get worse. I think C.J. Stroud is going to show some improvement, because I was a big C.J. Stroud believer early on in his rookie season, as a lot of us were, and he has just kind of regressed slowly. I do think he's due to turn it around. I think they're going to see some improvement on offense, because when you have a season like you just did where the defense has to carry, you almost have to make improvements on offenses or on offense. So I think Houston comes in second. The Chargers. Oh, by the way, on Houston real quick, I don't really trust the Colts enough right now, especially with all their injury concerns. The Titans clearly aren't ready to compete yet, even though I think they could be frisky. And the Jaguars, I do really like. They had a great season last year, but I think they're just due for some regression. And I think the AFC is too competitive. For the Chargers, this one was tough for me because I really, really wanted to pick the Chiefs. And I had to be the bigger man and acknowledge, okay, Kansas City still has a lot of holes on their roster. They still have issues with defense and with their offensive line and with their playmakers. None of that has gone away. They've got Mahomes coming off of a torn ACL. Travis Kelce's another year older. Those are all real concerns. For Denver, by the way, they were the one seed last year, but I think that we're going to see some regression from Bo Nix. Teams may figure out that defense a little bit and how to play them. They lost some key contributors during the offseason. I just don't think it's easy to win that many games back-to-back years. And so for the Chargers, you look at them and you're like, this is a team that was very successful despite a lot of setbacks. They still won 11 games and made the playoffs last season despite losing their two superstar offensive tackles. This team was effective and dominant through a lot of last year, and now you give them two guys at left and right tackle who are going to be able to hold up against almost any edge rusher in the league. Yeah, I feel good about that. I think that run game is going to come along. I think the defense is still going to be very solid despite losing Jesse Minter. And I think Herbert takes another step. So give me the Chargers. And then lastly, Baltimore. I explained this earlier. I like Minter a lot as a coach. I think he's going to fix up the Ravens defense. And I think Lamar Jackson is going to have a much better season than he did last year. I don't believe in a lot of the other teams in the AFC North right now. Cleveland, obviously not. Pittsburgh, obviously not, with Aaron Rodgers. And Cincinnati is too inconsistent. I like the Dexter Lawrence trade, but they are once again in a position where they're paying four guys most of their money. And the rest of the roster just doesn't have enough support or investment that makes me believe that they're going to be a playoff team. So I've got the Ravens. So Bills at the one, Texans at the two, Chargers three, Ravens four. Now my three wildcard teams. I've got the Broncos, I've got the Chiefs, and I've got the Patriots. So surprising, the Broncos and Patriots were the two best teams in the conference last year. It didn't feel right leaving them out of the playoffs entirely. Granted, I do think it's on the board for each of them. New England's a very good team, and once A.J. Brown arrives, I fully expect that offense to take another leap and Drake May to continue to improve, but it is a competitive conference, and this schedule is going to be much harder than theirs from last year. So they've got some questions on the offensive line. We'll see how it plays out. For Denver, again, it's just Bo Nix. I don't really believe in their quarterback or their offense. Sean Payton has proven me wrong time and time again, but I just don't think that they're going to be able to replicate a 14-win season. Kansas City, pretty obvious. I mean, I have no reason to believe that the Chiefs aren't going to be at least in the mix. If you have a healthy Mahomes, you can win any game against any team. And so now that you add Kenneth Walker, you give the Chiefs a running game, two new offensive tackles. Unfortunately for the league, Rashee Rice is not going to be facing any disciplinary action for, you know, his destructive behavior off the field, which is beneficial for the Chiefs in its own way. So a lot of things pointing in Casey's direction, not to mention Mansoor Delane, great defensive pickup, Travis Kelce's last ride. I don't see the Chiefs going out sourly. I think that they'll have another playoff run here. So that's my AFC prediction. Bills, Texans, Chargers, Ravens, Broncos, Chiefs, Patriots. Some of the most notable things here. Jacksonville, I have missing the playoffs, as I mentioned. I think that we're due for some regression. I don't love their receivers. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to have to be really, really good for Jacksonville to play at the level they did last year. And although I think he's capable of it, I'm just more confident in a lot of these other teams. This is going to be a really competitive playoff field. If it ends up being the case, it's a lot of great defenses, a lot of new coaches, and I think it would be fun to see how that plays out. Okay, moving on now to the NFC. For your four division winners, get ready for this one. I don't know. I should have looked this up beforehand. This may be the first time that I have four new division winners. And that's because I've got the Rams, the Lions, the New York Giants, and the Atlanta Falcons. So I've got a lot to defend here on this claim. Starting with the Rams. This is the one that I'm the most confident in. The Seattle Seahawks as the defending champs, I think we're a great team. But I think regressing to the mean is real. I don't think this is a historically great team. Every season, it seems like people say, oh, who's going to stop the champion from repeating? Who's going to stop them? They're too good. Teams change. Players get better. Players get worse. I think that the Rams are a team that's going to get better. I think that they added a lot of talent. I do wish that they would have used their first-round pick on something other than a quarterback, but nothing really you can do about that at this point. But Matthew Stafford and Puka Nacua and Sean McVay in that run game will always be effective. And that Rams defense has been remarkably impressive the last few years. They've been quick. They've got a lot of new young pieces who have been really effective. And I mean, the Rams were a game away from winning the division last year. They were a game away from making the Super Bowl last year. They were neck and neck with Seattle seemingly the entire season. I think that Seattle regresses slightly and the Rams continue to improve in what may be Matt Stafford's last year, by the way. I think he goes out swinging. As for the 49ers, by the way, they're going to be in competition for that division as well. I do think they're going to suffer a little more on the injury side of things than they did last year because that's kind of how it goes in San Fran. Kyle Shanahan, their coach, designed such a physical game plan for San Francisco that it's no surprise when a lot of these players start to get banged up. They got really fortunate last year with avoiding too many injuries, and I don't know. I'm just not as confident in the Niners. For the Lions, who I have as my 2 seed in the NFC, I just think they get their swagger back. They're reshifting their identity. They move David Montgomery, which means they're changing up their commitment to a committee of running backs. They are investing a little more in the pass game. They've added some defensive pieces, switched up some of the coaching staff. I think they're trying to recapture the fire that they had under them a couple of years ago. And losing that conference championship game to San Francisco after being up by 17 points seem to have really taken a lot out of the Lions. When they turned around the next season, lost in their first playoff game, it's just, these are emotionally taxing things that happen to a football team, and they all seem to come to its head last year. They lost both of their coordinators. They finished with less than 10 wins. They missed the playoffs. This is a Lions team that is talented. They've got good infrastructure and good pieces, but they need a lot of improvement at some key spots, and I think that they made those improvements. I don't think the Packers are going to be fully ready to go. I think that Micah Parsons is still going to be you know, recovering. And so until that's the case, their defense is going to be as impactful. For Chicago, I do think that they, I think they're going to be competitive. I think they regress a little bit. I think that they're still figuring out their schemes. Caleb is still getting his feet set in the NFL. I just believe in the Lions as an organization and as a franchise, and I think they go win that division. Now the New York Giants. Look, every year there's a team that goes worst to first. Every year there is a team that surprises people. And we have seen a few trends in the NFL over the last few years, which is that if you have the right quarterback and the right coach, you're going to be competing within the first few seasons you're together. And what did we see literally twice last year? The Chicago Bears, they were one of the worst teams in the league. They had a rookie quarterback with some promise and some concerns. They brought in the right coach. The Bears instantly win their division and compete in the NFC. New England, they have a rookie quarterback in Drake May, who shows a lot of flashes, has some concerns. They bring in the right coach, surround him with the right talent. All of a sudden, New England wins the division immediately, one of the best teams in the AFC. I think the Giants can actually follow this path. Jackson Dart showed incredible promise last season. The Giants have invested in the offensive line and in the running game to make it easier for him. Malik Nabers, a lot of question marks with him, honestly. His health is going to determine a lot of how things play out for the Giants because he is supposed to be a true number one wide receiver, but he is now in surgery for the second time. So things to be alarmed about on that end. If the Giants playmakers can't play, that may change things. But if everyone's healthy, why can't this Giants offense be incredibly effective through the run game and through the air? Why can't this Giants pass rush be one of the best in the NFL? I know that these are hot takes, but I think it makes sense. And if you hear what I'm saying, you see my reasoning. If you've got a good run game and you can play really well in the front seven on defense, that's a recipe for winning. You got to dominate the trenches, and that's what the Giants are trying to do. They don't want to get pushed around anymore. And then the Falcons. I just believe in this team in the South. I think Penix is a solid player, and I think their playmakers are finally coming into their own. Kyle Pitts had a much better season last year. Drake London showed why he's a top 10 receiver. Bijan Robinson might be the best running back in the league. That defense made a lot of improvements last year, and the Falcons got really hot to close last season. They were 3-7, and then they ended up tied for the best record in their division. I think that they get off to a bit of a hotter start. Their schedule is not super daunting, and I don't believe as much in Tampa Bay or Carolina as maybe others. I don't think that those are two great teams. I think that they're two struggling teams who are trying to improve, and I think Atlanta's improved more than either of them. All right, so now my four division winners in the NFC, as I said, I've got the Rams at the one, the Lions at the two, the Giants at the three, the Falcons at the four. So now who are my three wildcard teams? Well, I've got the Seahawks, the Niners, and the Bears. Three teams who everyone fully expects to be in the playoffs. Well-started organizations. The 49ers have been playoff regulars. If they're healthy, they're going to be a super dangerous team of the conference. If Caleb Williams takes some of the strides that people think he might in year three, the Bears could be even better than this. And Seattle, obviously, as the Super Bowl reigning champion, deserve to be at least in the playoffs. I would be very surprised if they miss the playoffs outright. They're going to be in contention for that division and for the one seed in the conference, but I do think the Rams are going to end up with it. All right. Now let's get to some other bigger picks for this upcoming NFL season, starting with my awards. I think the MVP of the league is going to be Josh Allen. I said I have the Bills as the one seed in the AFC. I think that DJ Moore is going to be an incredibly important piece for the Bills. I think he's going to have a very good season. The pass game's going to look a little better. I do like Joe Brady as an offensive coach. I have questions about him as a head coach, but at the very least in the regular season, I expect them to be effective and successful. Josh Allen is going to put up incredible numbers as always. He's going to be dominant in the rushing game. And, you know, when you you know, dethrone New England and play as well as I think he does, he's going to be at the very least in conversation for MVP, and I think he likely ends up winning it. Okay. Offensive player of the year. I'm taking Jahmyr Gibbs. I told you I think the Lions are getting their swagger back, and I think it's going to start the run game. They traded away David Montgomery, who was supposed to be, you know, Gibbs' complimentary piece. Is Isaiah Pacheco a solid replacement? Maybe. You don't sign Isaiah Pacheco to replace David Montgomery. This is going to be a Jahmyr Gibbs-centered backfield. I think that he's going to get a lot of touches. He is going to be the main focus of this offense, and I think he's going to have an explosive season. I think he goes for 20-plus touchdowns. I think he has 1,800-plus scrimmage yards, probably 40, 50, 55 receptions. I think he's one of the best players in the league. He might be the best running back in the league, and I expect him to play like it. Defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett. Look, I don't think he's going to break the sacks record again, but I have no reason to believe he's not going to continue to be as dominant as he has his entire career. Myles Garrett is building a Hall of Fame resume. He's going to keep trying to do it, and he is now stuck once again on a Browns team that is going nowhere fast. And so what else is there for him to do but to try to stack up sacks, try to stack up awards, defensive player of the years, and continue to build his resume and his legacy? I think he's going to be able to do it. Some other players, I mean, Max Crosby probably coming off hot after almost being traded this season. Dexter Lawrence probably has a good year with Cincinnati. You might see a cornerback or a safety come through and win it. I don't know. Defensive player of the year has been a fairly inconsistent award. I do think Myles Garrett ends up with it. Offensive rookie of the year. I've still got Jeremiah Love. Look, I know that I don't trust Arizona, and I spent a lot of time earlier in this show talking about, you know, the failures in process and how they're having him return kicks instead of getting him up to speed quickly. I don't really understand it. But clearly they're trying to use Jeremiah Love in a lot of ways. We know for a fact he is the best player on that offense and probably that entire team. He's going to have the ball in his hands constantly. I think they're going to use him in a lot of different ways. They probably line him up in different spots in the backfield. They probably split him out wide, have him come in motion. There's a lot you can do. And I think they're going to try to get the most out of him. I think they're going to do a good job of it. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes for 1,500 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns as a rookie. I think that's completely fair for a player who's going to be the focal point of this offense. And we're going to look at some of the all-time, you know, rookie running back seasons. I mean, Saquon had a good year. Ezekiel Elliott, an unbelievable season. Christian McCaffrey. Leonard Ford. I think Jeremiah Love is going to come in and be really good really quick. Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, great rookie seasons. We see this a lot because with running backs, they kind of come in without a lot of tread underneath them, ready to run. They've only been hit by college-level athletes, and their primes are a little shorter. So I do think Jeremiah Love is going to be a focal point and an important player early on. And then defensive rookie of the year. I've got Caleb Downs, unfortunately. The Cowboys got such a steal with this pick. Downs is such a talented player. You can line him up pretty much anywhere on defense. You can put him at free safety. You can put him in the box. You can put him on some of the linebacking positions. You can put him in the nickel, at corner. At Ohio State, they even lined him up at the edge a couple of times. I mean, he's just such a well-rounded and talented defensive player. And for a Cowboys team that so desperately needed help in the secondary, he is going to play such a big role. He's going to be one of the most important players in Dallas from day one. And that's not something to sneer at. I think that it's going to earn him the Defensive Rookie of the Year award. All right. We're about halfway through the second hour of our show here. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we are talking WNBA. Then we're going to take a walk around news across the block with a bunch of different sports. And then we wrap up our show with some hot takes. All of that with you after this.
Thank you. Did you know that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
Stressed? Need to talk? Call Help Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP. Or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please,
please help me? When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, welcome back in. We head into the last half hour here of my tenure here on Winning Time. Thank you again to all the listeners. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WMUC FM radio here on 90.5 in College Park. I'm Jack Wynn, hosting your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. And we have had a good one for you so far. We started off talking about the NBA. We did a dive into the NFL and some of the, you know, off-season programs and things that they have going on for the rookies. We talked about Aaron Rodgers signing with the Steelers. And then I gave my full predictions for the season following the schedule release. That was a fun segment, by the way. We're going to see how much my predictions change between now and when the NFL season starts, because there are going to be some injuries, there are going to be some trades, there are going to be players who impress, players who disappoint, and I fully expect my takes to evolve between now and September at the very least. But for now, those are my predictions. I hope I didn't spoil the season for you if you were listening. Anyway, we're going to shift gears here. We're going to slide back to basketball, and we're going to head to the WNBA because their season has been fully underway, and it has been an exciting one. There have been a lot of really close games. There have been a few game winners. There have been, you know, players making their debuts for new teams, and so there's a lot to get into. We're going to start, of course, with the Indiana Fever, who sit at 2-2. They're fourth in their conference right now, and they've looked decent. They haven't looked like the team that I expected them to so far this season, but they have been very solid. And I want to talk about Caitlin Clark, because she has really started to come into her own once again this year. And there were high expectations for Caitlin coming into her career in the WNBA because she was so dominant in college. And then she only had a few weeks of an offseason before she had to start as a rookie, where she broke almost every other record, and people thought she could be in the running for MVP last season until she got hurt, missed a lot of time. But this is supposed to be the year that Caitlin really pulls it together and becomes the superstar prodigy that everyone expected her to. And so far, she's been very good, but she hasn't been to that level. And it's because the rest of her team has been so solid. Again, this is not a team that is struggling anymore. The Fever were bad for a while, but they made the semifinals without her last season. This is a team that is capable of playing with or without Caitlin, and now you add a player who's as good as she is, you're going to start seeing some real improvement. Her PER for the season is 25, which is one of the best in WNBA history, by the way. That's a little advanced stat for you. But so far in the year, I mean, Caitlin's been incredibly effective. 24 points, 9 assists, and 5 rebounds per game. She hasn't missed a free throw yet. She's shooting a little over 30% from 3, which is underwhelming for her, but I expect the law of averages to eventually come back around. She is a very good 3-point shooter. And the biggest thing to notice, I think, with the Fever is that the ball isn't in Caitlin's hands all the time. They are playing much more as a team than they did early on last year, and I think it's because of the confidence that they had put in themselves following that playoff run. Kelsey Mitchell is a very good player. She's averaging 24 points this season on nearly 50% shooting. She takes over 20 shots a game. She leads the team in minutes. You would think that would be Caitlin's role, but Caitlin's a little bit more of a distributor this season, and it's just been working out really well. I do think that is the best backcourt in the WNBA right now, at least offensively, because the two of them, they are not the most talented defenders, I'll put it that way. But from an offensive standpoint, I don't know if there's any team in the WNBA that can keep up with that backcourt. Aaliyah Boston has been, you know, a touch underwhelming this season. She was really good in that first game against Dallas, but since then, just has not found a way to put it together. 4 points in her second game, 9 points in the most recent one. She missed the game 2 days ago. But she has just been poorly efficient, hasn't really gotten her footing, and it seems like she's not really, you know, fully antiquated yet to this style of offense that the Fever are running. It's very fast paced, and Aaliyah Boston likes to work in the block, and so that's not as conducive for her play style. Granted, she's an incredible player. She was the first overall pick a few years ago for a reason. I would imagine she's more than capable of adjusting and fitting whatever is needed. But, you know, until that happens, the Fever are going to be kind of in this middle area where they feel like they've got everything they need to get up over the hump, but they're just not able to do it. I think Caitlin, by the end of the season, is going to have the ball in her hands more than Mitchell will. I think she's going to be the primary decision maker. She's going to be the main shot taker. I think her efficiencies are going to come up, and a lot of these statistics are going to look really good. For Caitlin, why can't she average 25 and 10 this year? Like, I think she's perfectly capable of that. She's averaging 24 and 9 right now, and she's had a couple of bad games. I think once she starts to turn it around and pull it together, she could very well be averaging 25 and 10 for one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the WNBA. That's an MVP argument. Now, it's probably going to end up going to somebody we're about to talk about, because Aja Wilson is simply far and away the best WNBA player I've ever seen, but Caitlin is going to be in that argument soon. For Aja, she just continues to impress, and I have a couple of things to say first. We'll give her praise off the bat, because she has once again come into this year playing like her dominant self. Less than 30 minutes a game, she's averaging 25 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 combined steals and blocks, on unbelievable efficiency, by the way. She is 67% from 3, not a lot of attempts, but she is making them when she takes them, 60% from the field as a whole. So A'ja Wilson has just been truly dominant, not to mention being one of the best defenders in the WNBA. She had 45 points earlier this week against Connecticut and the Sun, a team, by the way, which I was immediately correct about. I said that I was underwhelmed by their season last year, and I thought that they were going to, you know, underwhelm again, and they're 0-5 so far. But she dropped 45 points on 15-for-18 shooting. And it's just a reminder of how far ahead she is of the rest of the league. She's won 4 league MVPs, multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards. She is the GOAT of the WNBA. And she's only 29 years old. And this is what I wanted to talk about for a second. There is a lot of pressure right now on Caitlin Clark to be the face of the WNBA, to have all this attention, to inspire young athletes and to boost the market and all the stuff that people want her to do. I feel like A'ja Wilson has disappointed a little bit. And she's started to do more. She's made some media appearances. She goes to NBA games. She goes on television to talk sports and talk chop. But A'ja Wilson is a good enough player and an exciting enough player, by the way. Her play style is cool to watch. She takes difficult shots. She is one of the tallest players on the court and yet somehow one of the most athletic. She's just not very marketable. And for whatever reason, she has not been popular with the fans as much as some of the other people. And it's just a little disappointing. I would like to see her be more proactive. And again, I'm going to give her the credit for the steps that she's taken because she's been involved. But for somebody who is seeing someone else in their league right now, like A'ja Wilson is by far the best player in the WNBA. And the person who's the face of the league isn't her. That doesn't feel right. And so I would like to see people at least pay more attention to A'ja because what she is doing is truly incredible. I also want to talk about Rekia Jackson ever so briefly. Unfortunately, she is going to be out for the duration of the season with her injury. It was really heartbreaking. Tearing an ACL is always unfortunate. Not unfortunate. Tearing an ACL for an athlete is devastating, and I feel terrible. And Rekia Jackson has been one of the more popular players in the league for the last few seasons. She was making her debut with the Sky this year, and she looked really good through 4 games, too. She was averaging over 18 points on pretty good efficiency. Just going to have to turn it around and fix it next year. But I'm excited to see how the rest of the WNBA season plays out. I picked the Aces to beat the Liberty in the finals. I do think we're going to get Aces over Fever in the semifinals. So seeing A'ja versus Caitlin, I think will be exciting. A'ja, by the way, ruined Angel Reese's dream debut with another win the other night. So she's just, you know, punking everybody right now. Okay. We've got about 15 minutes here left in our show. We're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, we're doing a segment that I like to call High-Speed Headlines. I'll be right back with you after this. We'll explain how it works and more.
Do you like the outdoors? Join the Maryland Adventure Program. This is a student-powered adventure that promotes personal growth and overall wellness. You can tackle a 50-foot wall through rock climbing or gather a group of friends to experience the challenge course. To get more information, log on to crs.umd.edu/Maryland Adventure Program.
Yeah. Are you a victim of the campus cough or other common symptoms of a cold or sore throat? The accredited University Health Center, located right across from the Stamp Union, can be of assistance. Make an online appointment at www.myuhc.umd.edu. You can receive primary care, reproductive health care, mental health care, dental health, immunization, and much more. What are you waiting for? Schedule your next appointment now.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean On Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
All right, welcome back in. Welcoming you in here for the last time. We've got about 15 minutes left in our show, and we're going to play a game that I call High Speed Headlines. Here's how it works. I am setting a 10-minute timer for myself. I've got 10 topics in front of me. So I've got to try to spend, you know, only a minute on each one. I got to budget my time. But a lot of these stories are fun. Some of them are interesting. Some of them are serious. Either way, they should all be talked about, and I wouldn't feel good leaving you with an incomplete assessment of the week in sports. So, we've got a 10-minute timer starting right now. Starting off, Kirk Cousins and Fernando Mendoza recreate the Step Brothers poster, wearing different outfits and doing photo shoots. I absolutely love this. I think it says a couple of things. First of all, that they've got a little bit of whimsy and they're having some fun over there in Las Vegas. That's important. That's a culture shift from what felt like a black hole the last couple of years. Pun intended, by the way, the Raiders and the black hole thing. Second is that the two of them are acknowledging that they're similar and that they can learn from each other. I think Fernando Mendoza understands completely that he's basically telling the world, yeah, I see Kirk Cousins as an older version of me, as a similar version of me. He's been in the league, he's experienced, and I'm going to learn from him. I know it's just a funny bit, it was a funny meme, but I think it really told me a lot about where Mendoza's head at and the comfortability he already has in the league and with this organization. Next, Deshaun Watson has reportedly hit it off with Browns head coach Todd Monken. I mean, talk about nauseating stories, man. If I have to deal with Deshaun Watson on my television one more time, I'm going to lose it. The fact that Shedeur Sanders has not won this quarterback battle automatically says a lot about Shedeur Sanders. But it says even more about the Browns as a franchise and the fact that they're still dealing with this dysfunction. Deshaun Watson, the last season he played, it was the worst rated season in the history of the NFL. 902 times a quarterback has thrown at least 200 passes in a season. 902 times. Deshaun's most recent season was ranked 902. So, if that's the guy who's apparently leading the quarterback race, so be it. If the guy who has two dozen, you know, accusations of sexual misconduct is hitting it off with your head coach, I don't know what the heck is happening in Cleveland. It just feels like more continued disaster, and I don't see the curse being lifted on that franchise anytime soon. Next, the New York Mets turn it around and win in extra innings, scoring 10-plus runs. It was 10 runs in the 12th to win 16-7. Truly incredible, by the way. The rare blown-out in extra innings thing, not something you see. They were the first National League team to score 10 or more runs in extras since 1919. So just a truly historic performance for that organization. For a team, by the way, that struggled so much to start the year, we'll see if there's any semblance of progress from them going forwards. Next, the NFL screws up and sends Jackson Smith and Jigba a trophy that called him the NFL's Defensive Player of the Award, Player of the Year. In case you forgot, he won the Offensive Player of the Year Award last season. They sent him the wrong inscription. That's embarrassing for the league, especially after the mumbo-jumbo that happened up on stage announcing the award in the first place, which I wasn't a fan of. But put some respect on Jackson Smith and Jigba's name. He's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. He had one of the greatest stories, greatest seasons we'd ever seen. So do him right. Next, Aaron Rye wins the PGA Championship. He's the first English player to win it in 107 years. This was an awesome tournament, and he was really, really good for a lot of it, especially that backstretch. He was plus 17,500 to win the PGA Championship. In case you're curious, that's about the same odds as the Las Vegas Raiders winning the Super Bowl this year. Worse odds, actually. So, just truly improbable, very impressive for him. He had a 68-foot birdie putt on the 17th hole to essentially put it away. It was his signature moment, and it was awesome. Now, Rye had a cool story. He came up struggling a little bit. He put covers on some of his clubs because he was always told to make sure they were completely protected, even though now he's a pro. He doesn't have to worry as much. Still keeps up that habit. It's a great guy. Totally deserves this win. Very exciting for him. Next, the Montreal Canadiens advance after beating the Sabres in Game 7 in overtime. It was a great game. It was tough. It was physical. And now the Canadiens move on. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs are really coming to its head here. And I have been very, let's just say, consistent on my predictions. I've been all in on the Avalanche for a while. I think they're by far the best team in the league. I think that as good as the Golden Knights have shown that they've been these playoffs, I think the Avalanche are going to run through them. The Canadiens, I thought the Sabres would end up winning the series personally, but still impressive that they did. I do think the Hurricanes are going to make quick work of them, which will set up Avalanche over Hurricanes probably in 5 or 6 in the Stanley Cup final. We'll see how it plays out. Next, Carlos Alcaraz dropping out of the upcoming competition because of his wrist injury, it says. That's just very unfortunate. He's been really good in the French Opens. He withdrew from Wimbledon. He had to withdraw from the French Open back in April. He's now withdrawing from Wimbledon. This wrist injury just seems to really be bothering him. And for one of the best, most exciting tennis players in the entire world, you hope that he can be healthy. You hope to see him on the big stages playing against the world's best. These tournaments always feel, you know, a little underwhelming when the best guys aren't there. And so, wishing all the best to Carlos Alcaraz. All right, we've got a couple minutes. I've got to hurry up. Trevor Lawrence pranks his fans by posting a picture of a haircut on social media. I had no words for that because I thought it was real at first, and it was one of the worst haircuts I've ever seen. I actually think it would have hurt his performance in the Jaguars next year if he committed to that haircut. Everyone knows Trevor Lawrence's long, beautiful blonde hair. Keep it. It's your identity. It's part of the Jaguars' identity at this point. Don't be messing with us, playing with our feelings now. I get it was part of the media bit, but, you know, really glad that it didn't turn out to be the case. Next, the Utah Jazz have reportedly discussed putting together a package to move up for the first overall pick with the Washington Wizards. This story really confused me for a couple of reasons. First of all, there are 3 guys in this draft who could go number 1. And Utah already has the 2nd pick, so why aren't they just happy with what they've got? The only reason that they would want to give up assets to move up to number 1 is if they believe that AJ DiBanza was really that much better than Cam Boozer or Darren Peterson. And I think DiBanza's great. I don't know if he's world, like other worlds away from these guys. I also am curious as to how many assets they would give up, because Washington really likes Tabanza and would probably take a haul. And if you're a rebuilding team, you don't really want to give up a haul of assets. But the main thing is, I was confused because I just didn't think the play styles worked. AJ fits perfectly in Washington. They've got a solid backcourt. They've got a good front court. They need a wing who can defend, shoot, and play make. That's exactly who Tabanza is. And for Utah, they need somebody who can run the show. They don't really have a lot of talent. They need someone who can be the focal point of an offense. And that's exactly who Darren Peterson is. So I wouldn't make the trade if I were either team. I would sit tight, take who's best for your franchise, and hope it plays out in the long run. All right, lastly, Caitlin Clark. Going back to the W. Caitlin Clark has officially been named the Grand Marshal for the Indy 500. This is, I think, a fun story. It's cool to get somebody who's prominent in women's sports out there, get their face seen. She has been very involved in a lot of different areas. Not to mention, she plays for the Indiana Fever. Obviously, the Indy 500 takes place in Indianapolis. It's a 110th race. People are excited to see how it plays out, but I'm proud of Caitlin for being the one to, you know, give the signal at the start and get involved anyway. All right, we did go about 20 seconds over, so I apologize for that, guys. And yeah, I'm sorry, I've got 4 minutes left in my show here, and this is honestly, it feels a little bit surreal. We're gonna go to the NBA really quickly, and then I'm gonna end off with a thank you. But we've got more games coming up in the NBA. The Spurs obviously took down Oklahoma City last night, and I want to stand by and defend my pick of the Thunder. And I do think that they're going to end up winning the series. I think that they're going to go on to win the championship, as has been my prediction all season. I've had them over the Knicks. People are getting ahead of themselves on the Spurs. I know they won game one. The Thunder were right there with them for a lot of it. It took a historic Wemby performance to get over the top. It took a logo three to take it to double overtime. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had one of his least efficient games of the entire season. And despite all of that, it was a battle. And so I expect OKC to play a little better. I think that entire roster is going to improve. And I think we're due for a few Shai masterclasses, especially upcoming in Game 2. I think that they're going to have some sort of scheme to get Shai better looks. Wemby is such a unique and impressive defensive talent that it's kind of hard to account or adjust for him because of the gravity he has on defense. But if there's anyone who can do it, it's this Thunder team and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I have named the best in the world. I am incredibly excited to see how it plays out. There's a lot of sports to be looking forward to over the summer. The end of this NFL season, the end of this hockey season, the WNBA and baseball coming back around, NFL training camp and OTAs, preseason as we discussed. There's just a lot to look forward to. And as I start to wrap up my show here, I am I'm leaving WMUC after this season. It is sad. I've had an incredible time here, but we're moving on to bigger things. I really appreciate everybody who's listened to me. And if there's one thing that you've heard that I want you to take away, it's that every game, every sport, every player, and every event has more to it than meets the eye. There are stories to appreciate. There are narratives that are important. And if you let those slip by, you're not going to get the most complete experience that you otherwise would. And what I tried to accomplish with this show was showing you that not only could sports be entertaining from a competitive standpoint, but there are a lot of different things that you can get invested in. Players and teams, legacies that matter, things that we'll talk about for years and years. And I'm so thankful for the chance to have a platform to share all of that with you, and I'm so thankful to have all of you listening. For the first time, I'm not going to end off this show by saying I'm excited for next week's episode, but I hope that you all continue to pay attention to sports, live in the moment, and I wish you all luck. Thank you for everything. This is Jack Wynn signing off.